God, that's such good material.
You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 152 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Hello!
You are fired up for this podcast.
Oh yeah. I mean, have you seen this Mariners season?
We'll get to it.
All baseball podcast. Oh, for the man. First time in history, it's going down.
It is a change of direction for the podcast. Should we start with our beer here?
All right. What is 52? Or do we have a notable 52?
I was looking at Seahawks. I feel like they're our safest bet. Kevin Mawai. Really, just, you know, classic offensive lineman from the 90s. Very exciting. But more exciting, I would say, than the Kevin Mawai edition of the Pelton Cast is the Stone Enjoy by 4 2019 IPA.
I think that's April 20th.
Well, but it's 420.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The Stone Enjoy By series is, the listener should know, because we've enjoyed these previously. I think all the way back to the original incarnation of the Pelton
Cast. If you're drinking along.
Yes. They have both the Enjoy By and the Enjoy After, which are specifically designed either for maximum freshness or, in the other case, to create new, more complex flavors as they age.
In this case, this is designed for maximum dankness.
That going back to the 420, of course, constantly delivered faster than any bottled or canned IPA on the planet.
Wow.
Stone Enjoy By IPA facilitated a paradigm shift in respect for and enjoyment of hoppy beers by ensuring craft beer fans the ultimate level of freshness. We brew this intense double IPA with more than 10 different hops, employing hop bursting and dry hopping techniques to amp up the peach and tropical fruit notes and overall hop factor. Brewed specifically not to last, this devastatingly fresh golden beauty should be enjoyed within 37 days, just like this episode of the Pelton Cast.
There we go.
Actually, no, because of the fact that there's nothing I enjoy more than going back and re-listening to old episodes of the Pelton Cast.
That's only you, though.
It's so great to hear how it takes
age. I'm sure that the brewers at Stone Brewing would probably be willing to drink this after that 37 days.
But they would choose not to. Like, why would they? Just brew new beer.
I'm going to go ahead and crack this open. We still have some time here before 420.
We do, but, you know, wanted to get, again, it's supposed to be designed to be enjoyed as quickly as possible. That's the latest you should enjoy it. But that still gives you some time, you the listener, some time to go out and look for Enjoy By on the shelves wherever you get beer. I got this at Fred Meyer, so it's readily available. Oh, you can feel those hops have bursted.
Mmm. That smells like the smell that I told my child was a skunk earlier today.
That actually happened because that could have actually happened.
It actually happened. I think it actually was a skunk, to be honest.
Oh, that's too bad.
We were deep in the woods of Renton.
Yes, one does. Should we do an update on our NCAA tournament pools?
I feel like we have a toast here to do.
Oh, you're right. A toast to You're the Worst, which is airing its final episode.
Why am I toasting to this?
Right now, as we speak.
Wow! Stop everything! Turn off this podcast!
I mean, you know,
I've literally never seen an episode of this TV show. Have you ever seen an episode of Game of Thrones?
No, of course not. I mean, I've seen, like, I'm sure there have been times where I've turned on a television, it's been on, but I have never, like, actually watched it. No. I'm busy watching FXX comedies. No, You're the Worst has been one of my favorite shows. Robert Mays, who actually had a chance to watch the finale because he was not recording a podcast, and it was several hours earlier where he lives in Chicago, delivered a tribute on Twitter. What a wonderful show. I was genuinely moved just as often as I laughed uncontrollably. I'm so glad it happened, and I would co-sign that take.
Wow.
So there you go.
Well, I've never seen this show.
It's too late for you now. I mean, probably not really in 2019, but it's too late for you now.
This is the show that, in the universe of You're the Worst, Sufjan Stevens opens a
broth restaurant.
Broth restaurant, just yes. Broth.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. One of the best. There's a number of great celebrity references, including, of course, my all-time favorite, a call-out of Marcelo Huertas.
A call-out of Marcelo Huertas?
Yeah, the former Lakers reserve
Just
guard.
Mentioning him?
He was one of the celebrities that was supposed to be at like the show that the hip-hop trio that one of the main characters does PR for. Wanted to ensure that he would be there. Marcelo Huertas.
Marcelo Huertas would be there.
And I have no idea where that joke came from. I love it. It is perfect.
I have to say, this is probably the only show on TV that references both Sufjan Stevens and Marcelo Huertas.
Exactly. That Venn diagram, it's only You're the Worst City in the Middle.
If only they reference Kevin Peltonik.
Well, not every show can do that. I had someone ask me today whether I was related to a Dean Pelton. And I thought that this was a Community reference, and the person said that they had no idea that there was a character named Dean Pelton. So that was amusing.
They were talking about an actual person named
They
Dean
must
Pelton.
Have actually come across a Dean Pelton, who sadly we do not know. Dean Pelton on Community is the only Dean Pelton
He's
I
the
know.
Dean Pelton that you know.
Yes. Okay.
You're watching that You're the Worst. Do you think the references are like very deep? You think people are going with high-level references all the time?
Obviously.
Usually they just want to know if you know a person named Dean.
Barry is back, speaking
Barry,
of TV.
Barry is back. Did you watch it?
I did.
Oh, my God.
It is back. I don't really have takes about it, but it's back, and I'm excited.
Okay, here's my take.
Oh, you have a Barry take.
It's funny because I don't even know the person's name. The Chechenian mobster.
It's Henry Winkler.
The Fonz. The Chechenian mobster. What is his name?
Noho Hank.
Noho Hank.
Yes.
Easily the best character on television.
Without question.
Right? I literally mean this. Granted, I'm not watching that much television. Every single other character is worse than Noho Hank. Like, I could just hear him talk about anything. The letter that he writes back home at the beginning of the episode, where he's talking about everything, is super great, working with the Bolivians. It was like...
I could go for a Noho Hank spinoff. Like, we can take or leave the later.
Like, yeah, and Barry. All the scenes that Barry is in, I'm like, let's get back to the Noho Hank part.
Yeah.
He got a little bit serious there at the end, though.
Well, no spoiler alerts here.
A little intimidating. But also, Henry Winkler, probably it's funny to think of him as like a role player on a TV show because he's the Fonz.
I mean, it's like having, the Warriors and having Klay Thompson be your role player.
Well, I feel like there's a better comparison for this. Okay, but I'm also going to say Henry Winkler,
because you want
best
to do...
role player of all time. The reference to Rip Torn, too, in the episode.
Yes, that is quite good. You want someone who was a star and now is playing a role on a good team.
Superstar who became a role player.
I mean, LeBron on this year's Lakers. Now.
But no, it'd have to be the role player in a very good team, is what I'm saying.
Like Walton on the 86 Celtics? I think that's probably the best
comparison.
I like
that you reference my Blazers. I understand this very well.
Oh, you celebrate that
you
77
could have said,
championship
like,
all the
on
time.
The Lakers or something like that.
Yeah, but that wasn't good.
It wasn't that ended badly.
It wasn't the best.
Okay.
I think the team is somewhat historically underrated, but it wasn't the best.
But yeah, that's Henry Winkler.
Okay.
Right? On that show.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, he is basically the perfect sitcom actor. Him, I would say, if we're doing sitcom actor power rankings, Ted Danson and Henry Winkler.
I agree with that.
And nobody else.
Do you prefer Henry Winkler on Barry or Henry Winkler on Arrested Development?
Definite Henry Winkler on Barry. I was actually going to do... I was thinking about tweeting this. You were like... I gave my Paperboy power rankings at some point in the past.
Yes.
Which was in reference to the TV show Atlanta. And the rankings were, number one was the song Paperboy with the Diddy. The song Diddy by Paperboy.
Yes.
Number two is...
By the way, still a jam.
Oh my God, I listened to it the other day. So good. Maybe the best song in the 90s. Number two, handheld video game Paperboy.
Yeah.
Number three, the song I think is called Paperboy by Paperboy.
The original hit was Paperboy, yeah.
Paperboy the Rapper is number three. My Arrested Development power rankings go. Number one, Tennessee. Number two, Season 2. Number three, Mr. Wendell.
Oh, okay. That's good.
But no, Arrested Development, I used to have such fond feelings toward it.
I've been rewatching it.
I'm like a mild negative now toward Arrested Development.
Because of the show itself? Or...
Let me just get a little bit of advice to the people out there. I don't know how we're on the subject. Anything that you love that went away, don't ever let it come back.
100% agree.
You almost never want any more of the thing that you love than you actually have. It's like...
Except Clone High.
No, Clone High would be a worse show if there was a second season. We would look back on it less fondly.
I mean, it's undoubtedly true.
Including this very podcast.
Everyone says so much better when the audio quality was us literally recorded into my phone on speaker mode or something.
One of my current coworkers apparently came, do you remember this? And hung out with us the night that the Seahawks beat the 49ers to go to the Super Bowl. He was like, yeah, you remember I found you in that weird alley? And I was like, this was gone from my mind.
So a lot of things from that night are gone.
But no, I remembered it now that he mentioned that when we recorded a podcast in the backseat of your car on voice memos on a phone, right?
Yep. Yep. That checks out.
Anyway, don't ever let the things that you love come back. They'll always disappoint you.
Pelton Cast, disappointing people since 2016.
Speaking of which, let's do a Pelton Cast bracket update.
The results of the Elite Eight were disappointing for my bracket, to say the least. Ben Diddy, currently number one on the men's side with 990 points.
Is that name, if after you're the worst style, a reference to Paperboy and the Diddy?
Unclear. Okay. You know, you'll have to chime in to say whether that is. But he has lost his champion, Duke. Looks like it probably could come down to the championship game with several people still in contention there. You and I are tied for 27th. Neither of us correctly picked any Final
Texas
Four
Tech.
Teams. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
I think.
Well, then you don't have any points remaining because you didn't have them winning.
Yeah, I had them losing, but I still had Texas Tech. Hey, 1 out of 4 ain't bad.
It's better than I did, which is 0 out of 4. 0-4-4. But things looking better for me on the women's side, where I am tied with Natalie Weiner, third Pelton brother Natalie, for number one in the women's pool with 1,090 points apiece. Several people also still in the mix to win there because not everyone took UConn to win the championship this year.
Oh, did they lose?
No, they're still alive, but they are not favored.
Are you verifying that I picked Texas Tech?
This is that big of a deal to you?
Yeah, I felt like that. I felt like...
Yes, you did pick it, Texas Tech.
I did pretty good with one pick.
I'm the highest ranked of anyone who doesn't have any Final Four team. I guess that's what I'm hanging my hat on here.
That's like the Northwest Championship.
I think it was perfect on the elite, like the teams that made it to the Elite Eight, and then all of the winners there were wrong.
You were perfect?
I think so.
You had a perfect Elite Eight?
I mean, maybe I missed one.
You
did
not have a perfect Elite Eight.
Oh, no, maybe I didn't. Wasn't even close.
You had three of them.
All right, I had six. God. All right, pay no attention. I can't do math. It's always a weak suit of mine. Should we talk about food?
Absolutely, we should.
It's time to return to our search for Seattle's best sandwich, which for the second consecutive week did not take us to the places we talked about going to on the podcast. We're very bad at actually determining where we're going to go.
But follow the podcast on Instagram, though. You'll see what we're eating.
That's how you can eat along with us. You last weekend were on the University of Washington campus along with millions of other people checking out the cherry blossoms.
It was a huge mistake.
Yeah. But you went into our G-Chat and said, where can I have sandwiches near UW campus? And I had to remind you that there's Ma'ono fried chicken sandwiches right there at U Village.
Okay, so let me break down the situation for you. Driving from Renton to U Village, I would say probably took about an hour with traffic. We paused at some point along the way to stop and go to the bathroom because I have multiple small children who can't go a car ride without going to the bathroom. I think we actually might have gotten off, or we might have gone to the bathroom at the Montlake Deli or something.
The Montlake Boulevard Market?
Yeah.
Which is a potential contender in this competition.
It didn't click to me what it was until... It's actually a nice little place. I wanted to buy a grapefruit.
Also, I've been told that...
It was a lovely day.
I have been told that it was Lorenzo Romar's favorite fried chicken in Seattle.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is, like, shocking piece of information.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to go back there. It's a very difficult place to get to. Waiting in traffic.
You're going to go see more cherry blossoms.
Okay, so it took about an hour to get to U Village driving.
Gotcha.
Driving around in traffic through U Village. Like, there's not a spot to be seen in U Village. We are navigating people. The lines at Starbucks are 1,000 people long. Not that we were waiting them, of course. They are canceled. But trying to navigate around them in a car, I had to just park in a non-spot, right? And leave all of my family there. We're talking, we're like 2 hours deep into this excursion. This is before we even got to UW.
I mean, it's got to be a big vehicle for the 10 to 15 children.
It's a school bus. So everybody is exhausted, frustrated. People are crying in the car, me included. All of this was so worth it for this chicken sandwich.
Wow.
I cannot believe. I've had it before, but it gets better every time. I'm like, I mean, we had a conversation last week. I don't know what grade I gave to those sandwiches, but it is bullshit compared to this chicken sandwich. Each of them is an 80 now.
they both, which had different scores previously, now gotten the same score relative to Mono. All right, let's back up and give some context here. So, a brief history of Mono.
Wow.
Chef Mark Fuller opened the upscale Spring Hill restaurant in 2008 in West Seattle on the Junction and served fried chicken based on his grandmother's recipe that he learned growing up in Hawaii once a week on Mondays. And it was so popular that eventually the restaurant rebranded as Mono in 2012, centered around the fried chicken. They subsequently opened a chicken sandwich counter inside the Rachel's Ginger Beer in the U Village in the summer of 2017, and then opened a second of those locations in the Capitol Hill Rachel's Ginger Beer, replacing Sunset Fried Chicken, another contender for Seattle's best sandwich, last fall. So I've been to the West Seattle Mono many times.
Do they have chicken sandwiches there?
They do.
Okay. Have they always had chicken sandwiches on the menu?
I'm not sure if they always had. I don't think I'd had one before going to the Mono fried chicken sandwich. Because like the specialty is the fried chicken itself. And that's what I had typically gotten. And, you know, I think we when we went as a group, we got that as the centerpiece of several items.
I remember the fried chicken being good, but not really standing out to me.
Yeah, I've reviewed some of your takes. You were quite high on the fried chicken, as a matter of fact.
Was I?
Yeah.
I'm sure that it was good, but it just didn't, like, it didn't stay with me.
So what I would tell you is I'm much higher on a chicken sandwich than I am on fried chicken in general.
Yes.
It's got a way higher ceiling to me in terms of what you can do with it. So I have been to Mona Fried Chicken, those locations, so many times.
Okay.
One of my close friends loves chicken sandwiches. He immediately, like, I took him after, I can't remember what the first time was we went. I know that the famous cousin Katie and I went before a Husky game against Gonzaga during the famous best week ever in Seattle sports.
Oh, God. They got destroyed by Gonzaga.
You know, in hindsight, we dodged a little bit of a blow with Shohei Ohtani. Just a little bit.
Is he not good anymore?
He's hurt.
He's still hurt.
Yeah, he's not gonna play until May. Who knows when he's gonna pitch? So I immediately appraised him of the sandwich. We went there and so Sunset had been his favorite chicken sandwich, and then he was like, "Nope, that's out. This is the best chicken sandwich in Seattle." And we have gone there multiple times since then. So I went on Monday because I thought we were gonna record the podcast then. I originally went to the Capitol Hill location since it's slightly more convenient for me. And I went up to the counter and started to order, and they told me we're out of chicken sandwiches. The saddest phrase in the English language. Okay. They were out of buns. And normally this would be fine because I would just get the chicken tenders, which are good in their own right. But I couldn't do that now. This is not a search for
Seattle's best chicken tenders. They were out of buns, not the chicken.
Yes.
You should have volunteered to like drive to a grocery store and get some King's Hawaiian buns and then come back.
They're not quite the same. The actual King's Hawaiian buns and you get in the stores would be too small. So I drove to the U Village location. I was really annoyed at the time. It worked out fine.
It's all worth it. You have to go through hardship. If you're going to goddamn U Village, you have got to go through hardship to get this chicken sandwich. And it's worth it.
It is. So it comes, as you mentioned, on the Hawaiian bun, which is undefeated
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Hawaiian bun.
Never lost, never even tied. Like, that's a good base for the sandwich. The chicken breast is enormous.
Wait, okay, so how spicy are you getting it?
I got it mild.
Mild?
Yes.
Okay, I went with the medium.
What'd you think?
Could have been hotter.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, I guess. Mrs. Fantasy Genius' complaint was that there was too much chicken. Am I correct here? God. I mean, it is...
The old relationship's been rocky since this.
Wow. Tough times.
I've actually put her on blast in multiple places, including to you, for not, like, this is how much I care about this chicken sandwich. We're talking about other things, breast. And I was just like, they're like, children are screaming or whatever, we're like trying to get in the goddamn cherry blossoms, and I'm like, but that chicken sandwich is really fucking good, right? And she's like, it was fine, and I was like, okay.
It is just perfectly, like, tender, juicy, like, it's incredible.
So good. Like, to me, there are situations that I feel like exist where you can have too much meat, right? Like the honey hole sandwich where I'm like, this is just too much turkey.
This is 2 weeks in a row with the too much meat. Like, Ben B is going to stop listening to the podcast.
I'm saying that it can happen because sometimes meat can be dry, right? Meat can be uninteresting.
True.
Not the case with this Ma Ono fried chicken.
I will say, if I have a nitpick.
Oh, wow.
And it's a nitpick. It can occasionally be a little not that flavorful in, like, certain spots. And that's why I have a recommendation.
Okay.
To get the cheese sauce as a side. Both to dip your fries and or tots in. And then also to pour a little dab on there.
I got
to
a honey take it mustard up a notch. Sauce.
Did you?
Which I was expecting to dip the chicken sandwich in. Didn't need to, though. So what you've got here, just breaking down this chicken sandwich, right? Let me know if I'm forgetting anything. You have the Hawaiian bun. You have like an aioli mayo.
Sounds right.
You have the best pickles I've ever had in my entire life.
Daikon, correct?
Oh, it's a daikon.
I think so.
Wow. So it's a pickled daikon.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Not even a cucumber.
Yes.
They are so thick cut and flavorful, right? Like it is bursting with flavor. And then you have...
It's technically, by the way, Kewpie mayo.
Kewpie mayo.
Yes.
Okay. And then you have the chicken, right?
And some lettuce.
Oh, a little dabble of lettuce.
Yep.
It's maybe the perfect sandwich.
Call off the search. It's been found.
I felt like it would be hard to judge chicken sandwiches versus deli sandwiches. And we're going to like a lot of sandwiches as we go on this sandwich journey.
Sandwich journey. The real best sandwich in Seattle is the friends we made along the way.
Yes. The friends we met along the way of eating chicken sandwiches in our car. By the way, also, like, I just, the whole experience, you know what I mean? Like, going to Honey Hole, you're like, you're at a sandwich place, right? It's fine. You're basically at just like a restaurant. You go up to the counter, you order, they bring it to you. There's posters on the wall.
That's how it works, yes.
At this Ma Ono? You're getting an alcoholic ginger beer at the same time. You could get a slush alcoholic ginger beer.
I mean, I had a non-alcoholic ginger beer float.
Non-alcoholic?
Yes, that's a thing that exists.
The only complaint that I have is that you can't take the alcoholic ginger beer to go.
You're working on changing that.
Yes.
Starting with this podcast on open container laws.
So help me God. I will overturn these open container laws if it's the last thing I ever do. But just like the drinks are perfect. The atmosphere is perfect. The chicken sandwich is perfect. The fries are excellent.
There's a little outdoor area, which I partook in on a nice day.
Why did you not get a cocktail? Did you give it up for Lent?
No.
Oh, God.
I'm drinking beer right now.
I don't know. Nearly. Jan gave up wine for Lent. Just like, I don't understand you people. But the uncomfortable look you just gave me for outing you, this is like a real Silicon Valley moment. Anyway, I'm giving it a 98.
And again, you're giving the other last week's.
retroactively going back to giving them an 80.
And the other custom.
Their grades remain. And you know what? I will like sandwiches maybe as much as I like the sandwich. At this moment, though, I cannot conceive a sandwich I like as much.
I'm going 97.
This is like a dissenting 97 to my 98.
This is like a negative 97. I mean, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen in the final. I think
you don't even eat pickles.
That is accurate.
The pickles are like a pretty big part of the experience to me here.
I'm somehow surviving without them. I think that, look, there could be surprises along the way. We had some feedback last week from the listener. Let me scroll down and at ColinCT206, who was concerned that search was already over, that we had picked the other coast based on our reviews last week. And let me assure you, that is not the case. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will screw up and not pick Loretta's, even though they know it's the best burger in Seattle. So look, but it's a journey. We're going to be surprised.
We're on a sandwich journey. It's a vision quest.
But I feel that we have had the best deli sandwich in Seattle in terms of the Raging Cajun.
Nope. Wait, okay. To
yeah, yeah, fine. And the best chicken sandwich in Seattle in Mo'ono in back-to-back weeks. And it is my anticipation that they will eventually meet in the final.
Wow. I think
that's what I'm saying here.
I don't know if that's going to be the case because I went to the other coast today. I got the Detonator, which you described to me as basically the hotter version of the Raging Cajun.
The Raging Cajun on steroids?
I was like, I need to order a fountain soda. Just in case it's actually hot.
Uh-huh.
Was extremely let down.
Really?
It's basically a Raging Cajun with less sauce and more pepperoncinis.
Okay, well, that sounds like an unpleasant trade-off.
I mean, it was just like, I want a lot of sauce on there. Like, I would describe it as like a B-minus sandwich.
Huh.
And it might just be, we've talked about this, that the Queen Anne location of the other coast is low-key bad.
Possibly. I've never been there.
It has to be the worst other coast.
of the three. First off, by the way, when
that's
you're
how
there,
we describe the third Pelton brother whenever we have them. After is the worst Pelton brother.
When you're there, it's just the coast. The other ones are the other coasts.
Okay. Anyway, just having that detonator, I'm like, I enjoy the sandwich, but the whole thing was not worth like $12 or whatever. Like, it was just not a great experience. I might have to go back and revise my rating for the other coast also. 280.
I can't revise it based on second best sandwich. I don't know if I invoked this last week.
I've only had Mo'ono at the one location. There are no bad Mo'ono sandwiches. And it wasn't a bad sandwich.
I'm invoking my rule, which I don't remember if I invoked last week.
Wow.
A restaurant is only as good or as bad is its best item.
But I'm trying. I'm having the.
No, it doesn't matter. You know what? You had the Raging Cajun before. You had it last week.
I've had some. Capitol Hill is the best other coast, I think, as far as I can tell. They will give you.
Ballard is the original. The OG.
Generous heaping of that hot sauce, right?
You could also ask them for it. You're aware that you can communicate with people at a restaurant.
Fine. Next time I'm going to be like, give me the Raging Cajun. Give me a fuckload of sauce.
Yeah. I want to see what they'd say to that.
Not a lot. Give me all the sauce.
You didn't hear me. I didn't say a lot of eggs and bacon. I said all the bacon and eggs you have.
For me and Tats, being a pretty experienced Tats truck person, I probably had the Tats truck 40 times. Turkey Tats draw me.
Weird that, flex, but okay.
That, yeah, yeah. 40 times. We have robes. 40 timers club. The Russian dressing, though, on that Turkey Tats draw me. The Tats draw me is good. Turkey Tats draw me, undefeated.
Should we try to go to Tats next week?
Something about my stomach is telling me yes.
Can we go together to celebrate my early birthday?
Wow.
Because I'll be in Portland on my actual birthday.
What day?
Tuesday.
That sounds good.
All right.
All right.
It's a plan.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to Instagram for where we actually go. Like, we'll surely not be.
So anyway, I'll see you at For All I.
Oh. One thing we should mention, by the way, I linked this, of course, in the post on Sonic Central, but we did have the executive chef of Maono and other Spring Hill restaurant group restaurants, Cam Heenan, on Talkin' Taco Time last fall.
So you're saying that we have been paid for this advertisement for Maono?
Not at all.
No, we've gotten nothing.
Well, there was some pizza, actually, I guess.
I think we might have gotten one slice of pizza.
Yeah. We should have demanded more. I think it's time for sports, and that means it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Well, I thought it was pretty fitting that Alex Rodriguez was here over the weekend, because the season after he left the Mariners in 2001 was a real record breaker. And also, the only season which we could possibly compare to the 2019 Mariners. Then we said, A-Rod who? En route to 116 wins. And this year, the record breaking won't stop. No! There are going to be records falling all over the place. Give me a famous record. Barry Bonds. That's the first one I had. Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most famous record. Give me that. Barry Bonds home run record.
Meet Jay Bruce. Give me another record.
This is rhetorical. Now you want to say one?
Hank Aaron.
Oh, the ultimate career home run records following this season.
Hello, Domingo Santana. You say Hack Wilson. I say Omar Narvaez. Chuck Yeager, D. Gordon, Kobayashi, Marco Gonzalez on the 4th of July, 70 hot dogs, down the gullet, lock it in, he's a dunker.
Huh, okay.
So in 2019, just like in 2001, we're now saying Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Jeet Seegers, Edwin Diaz, James Paxton, who? En route to 161 wins.
Wow.
Now that's a record I can get behind.
So does this make Yusei Kikuchi the Ichiro of 2019? Is he going to win MVP?
Absolutely he is. Wait, I have no idea who that person is. He's a starting pitcher for the Mariners?
He is, yes.
Did he start? He didn't. Well, he hasn't started any games that I've paid attention to.
I mean, he definitely started the second game of the season. I assume he started one of the games over the weekend, but how about Felix?
Man.
Is Felix back? Is he revitalized, found the fountain of youth? Probably not, but hey, we're riding it for now.
Yeah, we are riding hard. This team should be 8-0.
I mean, they very easily could be, if not for a pinch hit 3-run homer. I mean, it's not like they're doing it with smoke and mirrors like last season when they had, like, you know, were in second place in the AL West with a negative run differential. They have a plus 17 run differential, best in the American League so far.
Obviously, they do.
Their Fangraphs playoff odds all the way up to 9%.
Hey, that's kind of a big jump.
After starting at around 2%, they actually have nearly caught the Angels after sweeping that two-game series against them. You were in attendance one of those games and posted from the PeltonCast Instagram.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, here's the thing. There have been so many games this year where I was just like, oh, yeah, it's one of those games. Like, we've been paying... Well, I was going to say we've been paying attention to baseball since, like, 1993. But realistically, we've been paying attention to baseball from, like, 1992 to 2000. And then kind of, like, from maybe 2009 through now, on and off.
Hey, I'm pretty sure I attended opening day in 2008, so...
2008?
Yeah, I think so.
We went to one game opening day that Pedro started. That was like 2002, maybe?
We did go to a game that Pedro started on opening day. We also went to another opening day, but 2008, I did not go with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it has not been consistent that entire time.
It is not.
But there's sometimes those games where it's just like, the Mariners will get down early, like that Sunday against Rick Porcello, right? It was like they got down 3-0 in the first inning. And I was like, this is one of those games. I was like, the Mariners are going to get shut out. It's going to be like 6-0 Red Sox, split the series, we'll feel fine. And then I like go and do whatever. You know, I go to Lowe's and Home Depot, of course. It was a Sunday. I live in the suburbs. And I come back and the Mariners are winning 10-6. It was like, what happened? How did this happen in this time period? This is not what the Mariners do. Same with the game that I was at yesterday.
Yeah, it had all the makings of one of those games where they just get shut out.
Yeah, it really felt like a shutout. And then they grind out a run, home run in the bottom of the eighth, and boom, 2-1 victory. It was like, what did we just witness? Right? It was like every other time, even last season, I remember a Blue Jays game last year, where it was like the bats were not happening. And now this team that doesn't have Nelson Cruz, that doesn't have Robinson Cano, that doesn't have Jean Segura, all of a sudden is coming through hitting-wise at all times, at all costs. What's happening?
Ewing theory. That's what's happening.
I just like 2001. Theory.
You call it the A-Rod theory?
I call it the A-Rod theory. Okay,
that's good. The Mariners will start a 7-game road trip Thursday in Chicago, so we'll see how this continues. By the way, they have an off day on a Friday. That's such a bizarre thing in the middle of the series. They play Thursday, opening day, I assume, for the White Sox at home.
And then they have an off day?
And then off Friday, and then play Saturday, Sunday before, wow. I believe, a 4-game series in Kansas City.
Wizards behind that one. I mean, honestly, this 7-game road trip is going to give us a real sense of probably what this team is.
Yes.
If they finish it above 500, this could be a team that's going to kind of linger in the mix. If they just get destroyed on this 7-game road trip, then I think they are who we thought they were.
I got to say, I'm already taking the L on my bold prediction that the Mariners are going to lose 100 games this year. Already taking the L on that one. I mean, like,
if you look percentage chances-wise of them starting out 7-1 and losing 100 games, it's probably not very good.
It's very low, yeah. The Seattle Sounders had a 0-0 draw Saturday against the rival Vancouver Whitecaps. By all accounts, I didn't see this game, and I'm assuming you did not either. The Whitecaps played in uber defensive style, were content to have the scoreless draw, having not won so far this season. There was maybe a little bit of excitement in the late stages here, but not a lot of offense on either side. So the Sounders remain undefeated this season now, 3-0-1 with 10 points, tied for second in the Western Conference, which has been top heavy thus far. They're back home this Saturday to take on Real Salt Lake at 7 p.m. RSL comes in 8th in the Western Conference with 4 points from their first 5 matches, but have an incredible -7 goal differential, having scored 5 goals and allowed 12 this season. So definitely a chance for the Sounders attack to get going once again this weekend.
All right. It looks like a W.
Seahawks news. Let's start with the obvious, Russell Wilson. Bob Condotta reporting earlier this week that Russell Wilson gave the Seahawks a deadline to complete an extension prior to April 15th start of voluntary off-season workouts. ESPN's Adam Schefter later came in to report that the deadline was given to the Seahawks in January and that talks are not thought to be too far along with a week and a half until this April 15th deadline.
Why?
Why the deadline?
Yes.
I think because of the fact that he doesn't want the talk about his contract all summer long, like happened in whatever year it was, 2014?
I really 15? Hate the sport sometimes.
No, you don't hate this. I mean, yes, you should. You shouldn't do hate the sport.
You should hate a lot of things.
But in this case, you hate the Seahawks.
It's not the Seahawks, though. This is an NFL team thing to do, where it's like, you know what? Everybody knows roughly what number they're going to get to. Right, like the differences between what Russell Wilson is asking for and the number that they're going to be at is probably a matter of very few million dollars, right?
I'm just now developing a Seahawks hot take.
Oh, wow. I love it.
So April 15th is also the deadline for you to submit your income taxes. And so, you know, everyone knows this. Everyone knows this every year. It doesn't change other than when it's on a holiday or a weekend. April 15th is always the deadline, but when do you file your taxes? Do you do them in February? Do you do them in March? Of course not. You wait until the very last minute, and that's what the Seahawks are doing with this negotiation. And like April 14th, they're going to get their shit together. They're going to finally, you know, they're going to find their W-2. They're going to start going through everything, and then then they're going to file for an extension.
I wish that this were the case, but you're not thinking like an NFL team. The way that you're thinking is like a normal, lazy human being. NFL teams look at this and they say, we're not going to be pushed around. right? They're like, we're standing our ground. You don't get a deadline. We'll extend you when we want to extend you. Nobody is more important than the team, right? That is the way that NFL teams approach these situations. That's why Frank Clark isn't signed. That's why Russell Wilson isn't signed. Like, these deals should be
Frank Clark
obvious.
Is a different thing, because there's a number with Frank Clark that they won't go past, and they'll be fine just letting Frank Clark walk. And I
don't think that they'll be fine just letting Frank Clark walk. But Russell Wilson will sign a contract with the Seahawks. He will sign a contract with the Seahawks that will be the same number that they could get to before April 15th as whenever they sign it.
So you think that he will sign it afterwards, even though he's set this deadline?
Oh, I mean, that's the other thing. It's just like, it's an arbitrary deadline.
What is he losing from it? I mean, if he goes to free agency, like, that's a bad thing?
Russell Wilson is not going to free agency.
I mean, yes, he'll get tagged the first year.
There is no scenario that Russell Wilson enters free agency. A quarterback of Russell Wilson's caliber has basically never entered free agency. Of both his age, injury history, and caliber, can you think of any quarterback who has ever entered free agency?
I mean,
don't give me Kirk Cousins.
No, he's obviously much better than Kirk Cousins. I mean, I guess the big thing here is, you know, once upon a time, back when Russell Wilson was up for his previous extension, you would have said, hey, do you trust the Seahawks front office to figure things out? And you'd say, of course you do. Like, they built the team that went to the Super Bowl in 2 years in a row and won one of them. And I no longer have that same level of faith in the Seahawks front office.
I mean, they're going to extend him. You have the faith that they're going to extend him. You think the Seahawks would let Russell Wilson walk or trade him?
I think they might let him get to the point where they franchised him next year.
I think that's exceedingly unlikely. Who is the last major quarterback who was franchised?
I don't have an answer.
Because it doesn't happen.
But who was the last major quarterback to set an April 15th deadline and did have negotiations, quote, not to be too far along,
I'm
12 days away?
Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, like, extension timelines. You know what I mean? Like, these things may have happened.
I mean, what are the Seahawks doing? They're not signing free agents. We know that.
They're not.
What the fuck are they doing?
Is what they're doing. Ugh. Don't get mad, or do get mad at the Seahawks, but you're getting mad at something that you know is going to happen. Don't have faith in an NFL team to think
like them
logically.
Running too much. That's so I should not get mad about them too running too much, because I think that's going to happen on the podcast next season. Pretty sure that's going to happen.
Wait till Dwayne Brown's the offensive coordinator.
Dwayne Brown for president of CX Twitter, not king. It's going to be democratically elected.
Hell yeah, there we go. Do we have that on our list of things to talk about?
No. We don't have that on our list of things to talk about.
What did Dwayne Brown exactly say?
I mean, I'm going to have to research then, because it's not on the list of things to talk about. So do we want to discuss one of the other topics?
Sure.
While I'm looking this up. CG Technology, which operates several sports books in Las Vegas, set NFL 2019 over-under lines and gave the Seahawks a line of 8.5 wins for 2019. How do you feel about that?
Seems fine. I mean, it feels a little bit low, but like, do I want them to have a high over-under? I don't think so.
I mean, 9 would probably be a little bit high seeming, I would say, if we're to be honest. Okay, here's the quote. When you have a quarterback as talented as Russell Wilson is, you have to have balance. At times, I think we ran the ball maybe a little bit too much, and that's kind of hard to say as a lineman, but it worked for us. It worked for us for a long time. The guys up front, they lean on us. They lean on Chris Carson and the stable of backs that we had. So there you go. I think, Russ, we've got to use him as much as possible next year. He obviously had his best statistical year, even with us running the ball as much as we did. But the balance is there, and I'm looking forward to it.
Was it his best statistical year? I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Right? 15 was probably his best statistical year.
Unquestionably. Oh, so Luke Wilson did sign with the Raiders.
All right. This was an interesting thing that happened with Dwayne Brown, right? Because you're talking about a person who is set up in basically every capacity to value the run.
I mean, the cliche is that, you know, every time you listen to color analysts, they're like, oh, the offensive linemen want to run the ball. They love to run the ball,
yeah, yeah.
Which is weird because no one ever says, hey, the wide receivers love to pass the ball. Like, I mean, I get that obviously it's a less glamorous job and a more taxing job, but it's weird that, like, we care about one position's opinions about what we should do. But, like, if a wide receiver said we should throw the ball more, then they would be a prima donna. I mean, it's one of the many ways that, you know, the NFL is set up to kind of hate its most talented players. Yeah, I mean, look, there are
We understand the subtext here of which people play which positions.
Well, there are slot receivers.
Look, the Patriots are still a team. I mean, come on. They have to have receivers too. No, I mean, that's insane. But so Dwayne Brown, as an offensive lineman, as an NFL player, right? Because everything about sort of
is
like...
is a human being.
The infrastructure of the NFL reinforces run, 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 right? That's the traditional viewpoint. That's why everybody is like, if you play the game, you know that running matters. Dwayne Brown is somebody who is an offensive lineman, who plays actually football, and still says that the team should pass more. Like, it was a little bit shocking to hear.
Yeah.
Dwayne Brown's awesome.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, take our second and third round picks. But the other thing was...
Ideally, take Jeremy Lin, too.
He'll pass that physical. someday. The funny thing about it, though, was seeing the response from the pro-run crowd, right?
Like, I don't follow any of those people, so I didn't see it.
There's a prominent pro-run person who really likes to sort of like bait the passing crowd. And it was just like, when it all comes down to it, it's not even about running and passing that it is. You can delete this if you need to. It's not about running and passing. It's about protecting the logo. You know what I mean? Where it's like...
The shield.
It's not even the shield as the NFL, though. It's that people are employed by certain teams and the allegiances lie with the front office and with management more than they will ever lie with any individual player, no matter who they are. Yeah. Every single player on the Seahawks could say that the team needs to pass more, and people will still say that the team should run more if that's what the front office, if that's what the coaching staff is saying, because that's who's paying their checks. Right? It's just like, you do not... We have learned at many different media organizations, you do not criticize the people who are paying the checks.
Yeah. So speaking of passing, Jordy Nelson came.
Did we talk about this last week?
We were like wondering what was going to happen with Jordy Nelson. And then the very next morning, as the pod was coming out, he announced his retirement. He like took a look at the Seahawks. Visit the Seahawks
are you
one
sure
time.
We didn't talk about this?
I'm sure we didn't talk about it. I guarantee you it happened on Wednesday morning.
Okay, so there's a famous Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode. I think it might have been the first ever Treehouse of Horror episode where they go into this haunted house and they're fighting with the house and they're like, hey, in the end, they're fed up and they're like, you're either going to have to get over this or live with us, right? And the house chooses to demolish itself instead of living with the Simpsons. That's Jordy Nelson.
I mean, I assume he had other options out there and that, you know, it was really more about just nothing was worth, you know, continuing his career, but it is very amusing.
Jordy Nelson is the haunted house that chose to destroy itself instead of living with the Simpsons.
But happy retirement to Jordy Nelson.
No, congrats. I don't know.
On to the Huskies, who held their pro day on Monday, where Taylor Rapp ran the 40 in a reported 4.7 or 4.8 range after not running at the combine due to a hip flexor injury. And that disappointing result could push the UW safety, who declared early, out of the first round. Speaking of like being upset about football things that you just know are going to happen...
Whatever. I don't know if Taylor Rapp is a first-round pick necessarily.
But also, don't be upset about this because maybe the Seahawks trade down and get Taylor Rapp in the second round.
I mean, I boldly predicted that they were going to draft Taylor Rapp with their first draft pick.
Still holding that hope for that kicker.
Hey, Byron Murphy with the first, Taylor Rapp with the second. there would not be a situation where I would ever criticize. There was a thing where it was like ESPN was listing the Seahawks' greatest needs. Wide receiver was not listed. Tight end was listed, and I was like, yo, do you not realize that the thrill is coming back? There is no situation where the Seahawks could draft a Husky player, and I would not think it was an excellent draft pick.
What if they drafted Jake Friday?
I'd be like, you know what? Pretty accurate quarterback. Yeah, solid QB, like good guy to have in training camp.
and showed off improved arm strength at Pro Day. After working out with John Beck, who is of 3DQB, a protege of mechanics guru Tom House, who is also part of that 3DQB organization.
John Beck, former Dolphins quarterback?
Yes.
Okay.
BYU.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. That was interesting to see. Makes you wonder why this couldn't have happened at some point during college, but, you know. Whatever. A lot more time to
this
work
on
this sort of thing.
Story. Like, I mean, if we're being completely honest,
I mean,
do I believe that Jake Browning has completely changed as a quarterback after working out with John Beck? Come on.
Do I think that he has improved his arm strength? Yes.
Maybe. And now he can't go to the AAF, so options are limited. Maybe he had to hustle a little bit more to get drafted in the NFL.
Wednesday was the first day of spring football for the Huskies. Where Jake Haener took the first reps as the first team QB, later splitting time with, of course, Jacob Eason, the much more highly touted Jacob Eason. Let me tell you, I was so excited to put this note in here.
Were you? So anti-Jacob Eason.
I'm not anti-Jacob Eason. I'm anti-Jacob Eason hype.
Are you familiar with the game that Jake Haener played in last year?
That wasn't his fault. It's not your fault, Jake. It's Coach Pete's fault.
Maybe we need to send Jake to go see John Beck.
I mean, the arm strength wasn't the issue. It was the decision-making. Like, when you get thrown in randomly in the middle of a game against an elite defense on the road, some shit's going to happen, okay? And then Aaron Fuller was out for the practice after what Coach Pete called a minor procedure. Sounds like he may be able to practice at some point during spring ball, so that'd be good to see. I don't know if you have any other thoughts.
I mean, not about Aaron Fuller being out for a minor procedure. Not
no,
really.
No, just about spring ball.
I mean, I'm looking forward to going to the spring game. I think.
Are you?
Absolutely, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fun. You know what I'm going to get beforehand?
Mont Lake Boulevard Market?
Best fried chicken in Seattle.
UW softball beat Cal Poly 7-1 in a midweek game and then swept Oregon State by a combined 18-2 margin to run their Pac-12 record to 6-3. The Huskies will visit Cal this weekend. The Bears are 1-7 in conference play, just ahead of the last two Husky opponents, Oregon State and Oregon, who are both 1-8. So this is definitely the weak part of the schedule, the soft part of the schedule for Husky softball. We haven't talked yet this season about Husky baseball, which suffered a sweep at home at the hands of Oregon State last weekend. Two of the three losses coming by just one run that dropped the Huskies to 5-4 in conference play and 14-9 overall. They will travel to Arizona this weekend and then host California Baptist on Monday. The Wildcats are 2-7 in conference play, so a chance for the Huskies to
Cal
get
Baptist
well.
Is a tough one there on Monday.
Formidable foe. Cal Baptist, of course, making the transition to Division I.
Are they really?
They are, yeah. I feel like had to add them into my like college databases because they previously were D2 and now are D1.
Are they doing it in all sports or?
I mean, not football. I mean, I don't know if they play football, but yes.
Just they are in basketball though?
Yeah.
What conference are they going to be in?
They'll probably end up in the WAC. They'll be there with Seattle U. Like,
wherever Seattle U is.
They're going to be in the WAC. They're currently independent, I'm pretty sure. I don't think
really,
they're allowed
really
to
hope for an offer from the Mountain West.
Yes.
Someday. It'll come someday, Cal Baptist. It'll come for all of us eventually.
Let's wrap up with UW men's basketball, where guard Jalen Noel declared for the NBA draft last week. Something we didn't talk about, we talked about the possibility of him declaring, is that with the rules changes that got brought in, some good changes coming from the committee that was chaired by Condoleezza Rice, he can hire an agent and return to college under the new NCAA rules. Players must request an evaluation from the NBA's undergraduate advisory committee before they can sign with an agent, which that provides feedback from people in the league about where they're expected to be drafted. Players have to pay for their own training and repay any travel expenses paid for by the agent if they eventually return to school. They also can't miss class for team workouts, which especially works against players in the quarter system like at UW because of the fact that they just started the spring quarter on Monday, and that'll go throughout the entire evaluation process. The NCAA deadline to withdraw and retain eligibility is May 29th. But having said all of that, you read Jalen Noel's statement, it does not sound a lot like someone who is planning to come back to college.
Okay, what was
continue
the statement?
His career at the University of Washington. Let me pull this up here. Thank you, Washington. This season has been nothing less than amazing. The life lessons I've learned as a student and an athlete will continue to guide me through the rest of my life and have prepared me for the next step of my career. After talking with my mother, family, teammates, and coaching staff, I've decided to enter the 2019 NBA draft. I want to thank everyone, especially the city of Seattle, for your support. I hope you all continue to support me through my professional career. I will always be a dog for life. Much love, and go Dogs. Veins of Purple, Jalen Noel.
Yeah, he's probably gone.
Sure, seems like it.
I mean, how many players really declare and then come back?
A lot.
A lot do.
Under the old rules, a lot did.
Really?
And I think even more will now, because there's really no downside if you can hire an agent and kind of get that guidance as you're making this decision.
Have we ever seen a situation where somebody had a statement like that and then came back? It must have happened.
I mean, I'm sure it has happened, but I can't think of any specifics. I mean, I would...
Charleston, West Virginia will always be with me as a person.
If we're doing percentage chances of Jalen Noel declaring,
5% chance of him coming back,
I'm like 10 to 15.
He'd have to get some really bad news.
I mean, look, the question is kind of what kind of, you know, guidance or perspective he's getting right now, and that typically tends to be overwhelmingly rosy for players as they start to declare. Uh-huh. And the undergraduate advisory committee will throw some cold water on that and give them a more realistic assessment. But it also seems like there's an element.
Who's on this committee? What is the deal with these people? Like, who is it?
It's not, I mean, so the committee is actually basically they call up GMs or people in the league and they'll ask them, hey, where do you have this player on your board? Where do you think they're likely to get drafted? And they'll kind of aggregate that information and then report it back to players.
Okay.
So it's a very good thing, the undergraduate advisory committee.
If he hears second round, 2 undrafted, which is probably what he's going to hear.
I mean, I don't know how realistic he is that that's what's going to happen. Because you look around, like, he's finally moved into our top 100 on ESPN at number 89 draft prospect. As of March 1st, he was number 100 in Sam Vecenie's top 100 for The Athletic. Like, he's not someone that's being talked about as a surefire second round pick. He, as we talked about last week, he might get drafted in the back half of the second round if he's willing to agree to take a two-way contract right away. Otherwise, he's likely to go undrafted. I mean, I don't think it's very likely that he's one of the top 15 picks of the second round, which is where you actually get some legitimate guaranteed money as a second-round pick.
What was the deal with Alonzo Trier when he went to the NBA?
So Alonzo Trier declared last year... went undrafted, signed a two-way contract with the Knicks, and was able to very quickly parlay that into a deal that paid him, you know, more than most first-round picks this season. The Knicks hold a team option on him for next year with a pretty early date. So he'll either be again making more than most first-round picks or become a free agent, restricted free agent this summer.
So, I mean, it has worked out for Alonzo Trier, the situation.
It has. But I would say that is the exception that proves the rule. Like, if you look at the number of two-way contracts that get converted into anything more than the minimum, it is a very, very small percent.
The problem, again, is you're not thinking like a potential NBA basketball player.
Of course not.
Which is...
I'm thinking like the GM.
If you see a player who's sort of in your ilk, have success doing something like that, it doesn't matter that the percentage chances of that happening for you are probably pretty slim, that there's like the amount of Alonzo Trier's that there are very few, and the amount of players who we've never heard of, or what you might have heard of, but who I've never heard of.
I mean, I've heard of them.
Somebody called...
Actually, there are some players getting signed.
Hernan Gomez?
There's some players getting signed in the last week that I'm like, man, I do not know who that is. Billy Garrett got called up by the Knicks. I don't know that person.
Wow. Star from Texas A&M.
He went to DePaul. Nice try.
I was so close.
I had to look that up that he went to DePaul. I legitimately did not know this player.
Off your game.
Dusty Hannes was the other guy who got signed in the past week.
He's like a pretty successful country music.
his dad was actually a Major League Baseball player.
It's Dusty, like, Hannes?
Yes.
That's really his name?
Yeah.
What team
is he? I mean, Dusty is a nickname, to be technical.
His name is Dustin.
No, it's not. It's something totally different.
Wade.
He plays for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Played against the Blazers tonight as they got blown out.
And he plays a mean banjo. He dabbles in the steel guitar. Anyway, Alonzo Trier happening is a bad thing for Jalen Noel.
Yes. Because I mean,
he's going to look at Alonzo Trier as basically a peer of his, right?
Yes.
And he's somebody who has parlayed, like, being undrafted into getting paid more than most first-round draft picks, as you said, and having flexibility and playing time immediately in the NBA.
I mean, it's all about expectations. If his position is just like, look, I'm ready to get paid to play basketball, I don't want to be in college anymore, then, hey, absolutely, Jalen Noel is going to make money playing basketball, whether it's, you know, on a two-way contract, in the G League, trying to get a call-up, or overseas. Like, he's more than good enough to do that. But if he's getting declaring because of the fact that he thinks, I'm either going to be a first-round pick or a high second-round pick, and I'm going to be a big part of a team's future, then that is not realistic.
Sure, I agree with that. But also, I guess, let's look at this from the flip side, though. Let's say that Jalen Noel comes back, right? What are his realistic chances of getting into those places with a one more year in college?
I mean, it's tough to say because on the one hand, what he did this season should have caught the eye of scouts, mm-hmm. being Pac-12 Player of the Year, even though Matisse Thybulle really should have won that award. Shooting a high percentage from three, taking on a lot of playmaking responsibility, maybe more than he would have next year with Quad A Green coming in. But on the other hand, like, this isn't logical. And I think one thing that happens is, you know, NBA teams only have a certain tolerance for long-term projects. Like, they're willing to do that if you're someone that's so talented that you're getting taken in the first round.
Or like freak athleticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they're willing to kind of wait around for you. But if you don't fall into that category, and I don't think that Jalen Noel does, then you kind of get out of their picture pretty quickly.
To NBA teams, they look at Jalen Noel and he's kind of just a guy.
Yes. Like, you look at him and say, okay, what does he do that's his elite skill at the NBA level?
Yeah.
Is he an elite shooter? No. Is he an elite shot creator? No.
He's like a pretty good college shot creator.
Yeah. He's like good at creating contested shots in college, which is a skill that doesn't tend to translate particularly well to the NBA. I mean, quite frankly, he comes out terribly by my projections. Like, not an NBA player.
Okay, so how did Matisse come out by your projections 2 years ago?
I don't remember 2 years ago. It definitely wasn't anything off the charts. Like, I liked him subjectively more 2 years ago than my projections liked him.
How does he come out by your projections now?
Oh, pretty awesome. Yeah, it turns out that when you average, like, the most steals and blocks that anyone's ever done in modern NBA NCAA history, in my system, like, exceptionally values steal and blocks.
It's funny because, like, there have been, like, if I look at the examples on the other end, it's like you have Alonzo Trier on one end, but, like, Matisse is an example. He could have come out 2 years ago and done the same thing. He didn't have the same kind of hype. He didn't win Pac-12 Player of the Year 2 years ago. But by staying in college, Matisse Thybulle increases draft stock.
Yeah.
And probably will be a first-round pick.
He's on the fringes. I mean, he's currently, I think, 28 in the draft in the ESPN top 100.
When he really feels like the type of player that a team is going to become enamored with.
Probably there will be some team, and probably that team will be the Spurs.
I mean, he's going to be on the Spurs.
They're going to take him with the Toronto pick that they got, which I believe is 29.
We all know where Matisse Thybulle is going to end up. We don't have to beat around the bush. The Spurs are going to become a name.
We're
going
to have to adopt the Spurs when they have DeJounte Murray and Matisse Thybulle.
And they're going to be, they know they'll be able to teach him to shoot too. Like, he's going to become an awesome player in the Spurs.
Man. Spurs did it again. I haven't even done it yet, but they did it again.
They did it again. I mean, like, really, it's a similar thing with DeJounte. DeJounte couldn't shoot in college. And now he can, right?
Yes. And he couldn't defend in college. And now he's maybe the best point guard defender in the NBA.
Whoa!
I mean, I picked him all defensive first team last year. That's DeJounte. Not a surprise.
First team all defense?
Yeah. Wow. I think I had him first. Might have been second, but it was definitely one of those two teams.
Wow. Homerism. but
I mean, I often wonder myself, if DeJounte Murray had been drafted by the Suns and Marquise Chriss had been drafted by the Spurs, how would their two careers look now?
I mean,
because I don't think it would look like they look right now.
There, well, TBD on what DeJounte looks like after this year, but
true. I mean, he has a torn ACL.
Yes, where you go matters. Who you play for matters.
Yes,
and I mean that's the other thing about Alonzo Trier. It's like, yes, Alonzo Trier had a successful season, and also he's on the worst team in the NBA,
which gives you a lot more opportunity to play.
You're going to play, but like, is Alonzo Trier going to play next year when they have both KD and Kyrie and Zion?
I mean, fortunately, they will need a lot of depth then. But we'll see whether they... if they actually did get Zion and somehow got Kyrie and KD, they would probably have to decline Trier's team option then.
Really?
Yeah, just for cap space purposes. It would get a little tight at that point. I haven't done the full math, but it would get a little tight.
But there's also, it's like, so Matisse stuck around for 4 years and then found himself as like a first-round pick or a fringe first-round pick. Brandon Roy came back for an extra year and found himself as a top-10 pick. It's like there are players who have done this and really built up their stock where it's like now you've won the Pac-12 Player of the Year. Now you're on the radar of scouts. They're going to be coming to see you next year instead of coming to see Matisse.
Yes.
Actually, they'll be there to see Jaden McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart. And
no,
Quadi
we'll
Green.
Get to that in a second. But yeah, probably maybe Noel more than Quadi Green at this point. I mean, here's the way I think about it. Like, if your stock is first round or even high second round, you should go because there is a lot of risk that the longer you stay, scouts will start to pick you apart and consider your negatives. Mm-hmm. But if it's not that high, then you should probably stay because there's more upside than there is downside. Like, Jalen Noel's draft stock is probably not going to get much lower than it is now because he's not that likely to get drafted. So, I mean, if he were reaching out to me and I were advising him not as Kevin Pelton Husky alum, but as Kevin Pelton NBA analyst, I would tell him to stay.
Okay. Well, he's gone.
So, better get Jaden.
Shockingly, Jalen Noel did not reach out to you. Not expecting that phone call.
Someday someone will.
Brent Berry Jr.
So the McDonald's All-America game was last week. Isaiah Stewart had 16 points on 8 of 11 shooting and 5 rebounds. Looking good.
Oh God, he's going to dominate in the NIT next year.
Jaden McDaniels started alongside him for, I think he was on the West team, which is weird because Isaiah Stewart is from New York. And had 7 points in 15 minutes and refused to answer any questions about his recruiting. So we don't really know anything new about that process.
But last time we talked about this, his brother was a player at San Diego State.
Oh, that's the other thing that happened Wednesday morning right after the pod. I knew there was something else besides the Jordy Nelson thing. And that was, in fact, that Jalen McDaniels declared for the NBA draft and similarly released a statement that sounded very much like he was putting San Diego State in the rearview mirror in the past tense and planning on being in the draft.
So for Jaden McDaniels, the percentage chances of Jalen going to the NBA are 95%.
He's likely to go early in the second round or late in the first, I think.
But no, the percentage chances of Jaden coming to UW just went up.
A little bit. I mean, Kentucky is still in the mix, so we'll see what happens there.
They lost in the Elite Eight. I mean, like, come on.
Kentucky or UW? Like, I don't know if it's going to have a better season this next year. Look, Quade Green chose to go from Kentucky to UW. Why shouldn't Jaden McDaniels do the same thing?
That's a really good point. Wait, so are you saying that he should commit to Kentucky and then transfer?
Yes.
It feels like Jaden.
He should commit to do his big ceremony, commit to Kentucky, and then not actually side there and come to UW because turnabout for
there
Terrence Jones is fair play.
Get him back for Terrence Jones. Huskies would have won a national championship if they had Terrence Jones for that year. I firmly believe it.
I don't know if they would have won a national championship.
Final Four. Well, I'd completely forgotten about that Terrence Jones thing.
I remember watching that on like the live stream.
He's like not enough of a pariah around here.
People don't need to be pariahs.
John Calipari signed a lifetime contract. What does that even mean?
I mean, basically that they gave him some money to like fill some ceremonial role after he retires as coach.
They're just completely ignoring the fact that he might eventually be arrested. Like
arrested?
Okay.
I can't talk about this.
I'm just saying, like, that to me is a bold move for a coach who there's...
Well, it's not like UCLA was concerned about when they were offering him the contract.
There's higher than a non-zero chance that he gets Rick Pitino'd.
I suppose that is true.
So giving somebody a lifetime contract feels like. But anyway, Arizona gave Sean Miller a contract that he gets paid no matter what happens. So
great contract. Shouts to Sean Miller's agent. Every week on the pod, there should be a bingo score.
Love these public institutions.
Shouts to Sean Miller's agent. But Blazers fans were booing Chandler Parsons tonight. And like the best thing that happened to you is that Chandler Parsons did not sign with the Blazers.
Maybe they were just booing Chandler Parsons for being Chandler Parsons.
Oh.
I might have booed him too. As a Blazers fan. Whatever the rest of us were
my
thinking.
Blazers. You still hold a grudge on Raymond Felton and Hedo Turkoglu? I mean, actually, there legitimately are some reasons to hold a grudge with Hedo Turkoglu now.
Yeah, I'm pissed. I don't know what happened with Hedo, but...
Well, he's an advisor to the Turkish president and is speaking out against Enes Kanter, so he actually is legitimately in a feud with the Blazers now.
Furious.
Yeah. All right, on that note...
There's a lot of things that I feel like you need to delete from this podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.